Okay, now we move on to some news or some ideas on the outlook of 2023 for startups in Malaysia as well as the growth engine for this country. Joining us is a good friend of ours, Aaron Sarma, the general partner at Scale Up Malaysia. Good morning, Aaron, and Merry Christmas to you, Aaron.
Merry Christmas and happy season to everybody who doesn't celebrate.
That, yeah, of course, because we're looking also at the idea of what is in store for us for 2023. I want to do a quick stock take in terms of how 2022 has been. It has not been favorable for businesses, SMEs as well. But generally speaking, 2023 holds some promise for some of the businesses in this country and beyond. Perhaps you can do a quick stock take in terms of the review of 2023 when it comes to the realm of startups and perhaps investing as well.
Yeah, okay. So I think just generally looking at this year, we thought this year would be a good year for everybody, the economy in general. We thought that we're going to have great upside after the pandemic, but we were faced with a lot of challenges, right? Firstly, there was the war with Russia and Ukraine happening up in Europe. The Fed was also increasing interest rates, which made the cost of capital much higher than we initially anticipated. And we also kind of saw a lot of interesting things happening in the local ecosystem, right? So the good, we can just list a couple of great things that happened. Panjana Capital started deploying in a big way. So we saw a lot of investments from local venture capital firms in Malaysia. Mavcap also started doing a lot of interesting things, backing a lot of new fund managers, investing in a lot of new firms. So we're very excited here. Companies like Property Guru had a SPAC on the stock exchange. GoTo listed for $1.1 billion. Sequoia Capital launched $850 million US dollar fund for Southeast Asia. And collectively, Southeast Asian VCs have raised $3.03 billion in the first half of 2022, which is more than all of 2021 combined. In Malaysia also, we had 5 digital banking licenses which were announced. So really, really interesting to see what's happening in the overall ecosystem. And of course, locally, we saw some stability in the markets with the election having a result that seems to be more permanent than we've had for the last few years. You and I were on air about a month ago talking about this. But we've also had some bad times. I think it's worth talking about that as well. In Q1, we started to see what we think about as like a funding winter in Southeast Asia as far as investments are concerned. We saw a lot of VCs kind of slow down their approach. Not that they weren't deploying, but they were being a bit more cautious, looking at companies with a little bit more runway. Some startups did not do really well. We heard of a couple of startups that didn't quite make it. Something like Zilingo had a really kind of high profile fallout, which happened in that company. A lot of crypto stuff didn't quite do very well with Terra Luna and most recently FTX. And also we saw a lot of layoffs, right? So a lot of high profile companies lay off staff, and we saw even like globally around the world. So it's been a bit of a mixed bag. A lot of interest in Southeast Asia from what we can gather, and people really want to invest in the region. And I think Malaysia can play a really big role in that space in 2023. If we are very careful about it and if we're very smart about how we deploy our assets and our resources to develop our local ecosystem.
You know, I really want to bring in the conversation of PNB, because yesterday we saw PNB announcing 3.35 cent per unit. And it's normal for some folks to get a bit upset in terms of this. But one tends to forget that, you know, this is a fund that is only applicable to 60% of us in this country. Another 40% can't partake in it. And therefore, you know, there is that whole idea of how some good funds like ASB is being locked out. But at the same time, it also brings about the conversation of how things are going to be invested. Now, we're looking at VCs, for instance. They're not necessarily able to invest in large funds the way PNB does, at about 330 billion ringgit, for instance, an AUM of up to that is up 1.9%. But that's the point. Investing in 2022 was a tough year. That's what I'm trying to get at here, Aaron. And whether you're investing in private equity or public equity or fixed income, generally speaking, outlook 2023 has to be somewhat better than what 2022 has been, isn't it? Or do you feel that 2023 investing also is going to be a bit tough the way, say, 2022 has been?
I think what's important is you have understand which hat you're wearing, right? I know wearing a Santa hat.
You're wearing a Santa hat. That's clear.
Which
is kind of strange because we're talking about some bleak outlook here, and there's a lot of jolly and happiness going around.
So I thought I'd bring some cheer before I bring the doom and gloom of it. I think most people agree that next year is going to be really tough if you're an investor and a capital allocator, because you're going to want to make sure that you invest in companies that will be able to sustain over a long period of time. So I think is very clear is that there won't be people investing in companies that don't have long runways. So if you're a founder out there and you're hoping to live off venture capital funds, those days are gone, because nobody knows how long this kind of lull in the economy will last. It could last a year, it could last 2 years, it could be 3 years. And depending on which doom and gloom story you read and you hear about, you could either think that this doom and gloom story is going to be like 1998, which will be a couple of years, or it's like 2008, where it will bounce back pretty fast, right? So really, it's a question of what you believe will happen. And because people don't know what will happen, VCs are going to look for companies that have sustainable runways, which means that you can run your business in perpetuity with like an infinite runway without living on venture capital funding. So, and also, they're going to be looking at what's going to be happening in the ecosystem at large, right? So they'll be making bets that they will not be able to recoup capital for in a couple of years. It's going to be quite a while before they see money coming back, or maybe the next round being raised. So they're going to be very careful about who they invest in, the kind of startups they back, the kind of prospect for the business is going to be really important. Also, in terms of like technological advancements, I know we've looked at things like ChatGPT with generative AI being really exciting of late as well. A lot of people are now questioning a lot of the investment theses that they have, because if you can build a startup with code now, and if an AI can build something better in a couple of years, you're going to want to be able to back a company or a business which has a view on this and is able to build businesses which will sustain, not just in a cash flow sense, but also in an innovation sense over the next couple of years.
Also, Aaron, speaking about ChatGPT, that's the idea that we're looking at right now. When startups are trying out their luck in terms of the space of AI, trying to generate deep tech solutions, it's important for us to also look at what needs to be done when it comes to talent building. It's not easy trying to get talent in Malaysia, at least, that is able to code on AI. But it's also important for us to look at the ecosystem for us to bring in better talents coming in. It's a new administration. It's a new government. Do you feel that the government has the wherewithal in terms of trying to allow for an ecosystem to flourish in Malaysia, harking back to what we were discussing a few months ago on air, on this show, actually, Negawani? You were talking about how investors don't even care about Malaysia. We're really, really in a black box. They have neither positive opinions of us, nor do they have negative opinions of us, because they don't have any opinion of us. We are completely out of their realm. Do you feel that this government needs to do more in terms of facilitating an ecosystem that facilitates not just investments, but of course, startup ecosystem as well?
I think 100%. What this government will do remains to be seen, because we're also looking to see what the policy initiatives will be over the next couple of months. You're right. Capital is an important component about building an ecosystem, but talent is the other really important component, right? And being able to have good people in the ecosystem, building startups and ventures and even working in successful companies is really important. And you can't understate it and underscore it, because people think that, it's all about just throwing money at the problem. No, it's not. It's about having the right people to build these solutions. I'll give you an example. Like, if you have a startup in Malaysia and you can't hire the best, just to give you the example, you get like an AI programmer or a blockchain programmer, and you get like the second tier guys, which you have to train up, you're already at a disadvantage from the guy in Indonesia who's being able to hire the best programmer out there to do their work for them, right? You're already like setting the race 10 meters behind the last guy who's running already. And so that puts you at a disadvantage. So when you go out there to fundraise, you're already not as impressive as you need to be. So I think it's really important that we look at talent, but we also not just look at training and developing talent internally. We also need to look at importing talent because that's a short-term fix. We can't wait for the next couple of rounds of graduates to come out and start working and hope that they are able to build those solutions. We need to be able to be liberal enough to say, hey, if you're a great coder from India or from Vietnam or from Eastern Europe who wants to come and live here, come and live here. We'll give you a visa for 10 years, no problem. And you build startups in Malaysia. Because I think that would be what's important to help our entrepreneurs have that advantage as they compete in a regional ecosystem. Because one thing about the thing you mentioned earlier about Malaysia being like not talked about, we're kind of flyover country, right? Because what we are now seeing is that ASEAN itself is an ecosystem. And so if we're competing, we're not just competing in Malaysia, Malaysian entrepreneurs are competing with the ASEAN region. And so we need to make sure that on the policy standpoint, our policymakers enable our entrepreneurs to compete regionally with their counterparts in Singapore, Indonesia, Vietnam, and the rest of the region.
Okay, another item that we need to look at is money, literal money coming in. LPs are generally speaking more selective in terms of choosing their VCs and therefore PEs as well. And VCs are looking for better guidance in terms of how to develop some sort of an investment committee that brings about better value in terms of the companies that they invest in. A few months ago, I was part of the VC conference and in KL, and they were talking about an investment winter. Do you feel that 2023, the winter is going to continue on, or is the money tap going to start running again and we're going to get more money coming in for all the startups in this country?
So I think in early 2023, we'll see a little bit of a slowdown because so long as the Fed rates are going to be as high as they've been until it's, I mean, and I know they're tapering off a bit, and so long as they loosen that up, I think that's going to be a huge boon for the VC industry because people will be allocating capital. I think a lot of investors are looking over the next few years with the same kind of trepidation which I mentioned the average VC is, right? If I'm a high net worth individual or I'm a corporate, where do I put my money now in a way that A, I know it's safe, and B, I know I can get it back when I need it? A lot of them will be investing in liquid assets, right? In equities or in maybe even some properties as well, because the idea is that they want to be able to recoup the capital back, or even in businesses that have good cash flow, right? The VC asset is an illiquid asset. You put your money in a fund and you will see it back in 10 years, hopefully, right? And it doesn't provide liquidity that a lot of other kinds of investment vehicles would provide you, though the returns may be very, very exciting over that period. So if you can sustain that period, that's great. We're seeing globally that interest in VC investing is extremely high because everybody believes the thesis that the next great company will come out of this period. So a lot of people are actually looking to invest in funds with good track records, with experience building great entrepreneurs and great companies. They will get a bulk of the lion's share of the money. So I'm actually seeing that there's a lot of interest. We are talking to a lot of LPs right now who are really interested in what we're doing in the region, and we're seeing that across the board from all our people that we work with in the industry as well, the other VC firms that we are collaborating with. So I think ultimately, first half will be a little bit tough, but I think over the next half of 2023, we'll see a really, really good year for VCs who want to come aboard and raise capital from the market as well as invest into startups.
Right, you're running Startup Malaysia with your partners.
Scale Up Malaysia.
What would be some of the areas of interest that you're looking at right now? Is it AI? Is it agro tech? Is it climate tech? What's hot on the plate right now?
Okay, I think what's happening with generative AI is really interesting. Okay, but I do think the jury is kind of out about how this will impact our lives. I feel in a meaningful way it will. So we are going to keep our finger on that pulse to see what we can do in that space, what startups are being built in that space. We're actually talking to a couple of guys who are building solutions in that space, which is really, really interesting stuff that's happening there. I'm also a big believer in agri-tech or agro-tech, depending on which nomenclature you like. I think Malaysia is uniquely positioned to be an agriculture technology hub. We've got really good experience with plantation companies, which we've been there for decades. We've got smallholder farmers. We've got very stable regulation and very open technology. So I think if we play our cards right, we could be the hub for the region. And in fact, like every time I speak to an agriculture startup, even if they're not based in Malaysia, they tell me they want to hub in Malaysia. They want to have a base in Malaysia because they see tremendous opportunity here. They think they can grow here, and they think they can use Malaysia as like a test case and a bedrock to kind of build stuff within the region and expand outside of the region. I think just adjacent to agritech is the idea of food security. I think people are really looking into this right now, into building ecosystems that will help the average person over the next couple of years. We always are looking at the macro issues of population growth and how that will affect the average life of the average citizen. I think that's going to be really important. And to harken back to something that the Prime Minister has mentioned, I am looking for startups who are able to help in the cost of living crisis that's being experienced around the world, but specifically in Malaysia. So if you're a startup that's really looking at solutions to help the average person, be it through digital inclusion, through financial technology, these are things that we're really, really interested to talk to you about.
You know, talking about AI, right, ChatGPT was released about a few weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, actually. There has been rave reviews on it. I'm wondering if you have tried it.
I mean, the first weekend it came out, I spent like, you know, a couple of hours playing with it because it's really amazing, right? You know, you can actually like write an entire blog post with it. You can even, and I read stories about how school children are trying to figure out if they can do their assignments with the thing already. What it does to me is it shows that the human element in the economy may change over the next decade, right? We won't be so much about us doing research work or laborers work, but it will be about ideas because you still have to tell the AI what to do, right? You have to tell it, like, this is the question I want, this is the answer I'm looking for, this is the solution I'm trying to solve. And it will really be about people looking for problems and trying to solve it using the tools that we have now. Right. And I know a lot of people are very nervous whenever there's a new technology that comes out. But people evolve. Right. We have there are no longer anybody who can ride a chariot effectively in the market, but everybody can drive a car. Maybe in the future, we won't even need to drive a car because an AI will drive us around. And, you know, I think these are things that will happen in the future. So I think AI actually presents new opportunities. I feel as a nation, we should have a strategy for how we will adopt the solutions, both for civil service, for the private sector, and how we encourage innovation in this space, because I think we've got a lot of great companies who will benefit from it.
Nobody's going to question in terms of the promise and the level of ideas that is coming in, not just in this region, but globally as well. The issue has always been execution and team building and leadership. That, you know, ChatGPT and AI notwithstanding, it's all about humans right now and human capital moving forward. 2022 has been about brought about some rough changes in terms of how we look at human capital structure. Do you feel that 2023 should be given in that regard as well, how we move ahead and how we manage people and talent, not just in tech, but generally speaking, organizations at large?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're living in the post-pandemic world as well. And, you know, companies have actually seen, we've seen companies that kind of struggle with what work and work-life balance needs to be. Some companies have gone all the way and said, okay, we'll just do full remote, right? And there are drawbacks with that, right? You lose the team culture, you lose the ability to collaborate and work together because it's kind of different when you're not in the same room together. Some companies have gone all the way and said, look, everybody comes back to the office, and we've seen some employees complain and protest about it. So you've actually seen kind of a spread. And that's in terms of how you manage people. But I think on a more general basis, right, I think what's important is employers need to look at their staff and to see how they can not just be a factory or a place where people just come to do work, but a place that people can grow and develop. We're seeing that the new generation of employees are looking not just for a place to earn a paycheck, but a place where they can develop themselves. It's not just a place for them to, you know, do a job or do whatever they study. They want to grow. And I think if you can promise growth to the average employee, you'll see that they'll stay with you for a long time and they'll want to grow. And so as a nation, we need to see it that way as well. It's not about just providing jobs. Gig work is great for a season, but in the long haul, people all want to grow. They want to have something meaningful in their life. And they want to have a meaningful existence, which means they want to do things that matter to them. So we need to provide avenues for people to pursue these passions, be it in the art or in technology or in innovation, to pursue things that they really believe in so they can be more fulfilled as a society.
Thank you, Aaron. So what are you going to do over the weekend? Of course, final week of the year as well.
Well, for one thing for sure, I'm going to break whatever diet I've had for the last year. Eating for the next 12 days of the year.
Nanti tak sure. Muat, you punya beautiful jacket ni.
I know. I worked so hard to fit in again, but you know, it may not fit anymore.
Oh, well, it's just one more week to go. I wish you all the best. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Not to you, not just to you, but of course to the rest of Malaysia as well. That was Aaron Sarma, general partner at Scale Up Malaysia. Aaron, all the best. See you next year.